Hi, Happy New Year, and welcome back to PwC's CFO Direct podcast series. I'm Heather Horn, a partner in our national office, and I'll be your host today. It's January 2019, and we're looking at the year ahead, thinking about matters that could impact accounting and reporting. One of the items that's top of mind right now is SEC reporting, as many companies prepare for year-end, and as we think about the number of items they have on their agenda. I'm joined here in the studio today by Martin Thistleton Dyer. He's a partner in our national office who focuses on working with engagement teams and companies around the world, helping them deal with SEC requirements and matters. Martin's going to fill us in on the top five things we need to know about the SEC's agenda as we look ahead to 2019. So let's jump right in by talking about the agenda itself and sort of the process and priorities for the SEC. So Martin, what's the first item that you'd like to take us through related to the SEC's priorities, agenda, and rulemaking?
Well, Heather, I think what might be helpful is to provide listeners with a bit of background to how the rulemaking process actually works at the SEC. So the SEC is required to publish a regulatory agenda two times a year. It's available publicly. It's often referred to as being their RegFlex agenda. And this near-term agenda really outlines the initiatives that the SEC reasonably expects to complete over the current, the forthcoming year. The last version of the RegFlex agenda was published back in August. And the SEC chair kind of described that agenda as being ambitious but pragmatic. In years past, it had been very much a kind of a wish list, if you like, of topics that the SEC would get to, and the chair's been really focused on trying to make that something that's achievable, to keep constituents focused on the SEC's mission. But to be clear, not all items on that agenda, have to be completed within that year, and they will not necessarily all make their way to final rules or changes in regulations. So the rulemaking process can involve several steps. There can be the solicitation of comments from the public. The SEC can issue a concept release, setting out broad themes and inviting comments on those themes. There's a very thorough due process that the SEC needs to follow in terms of an analysis and digesting that input before coming up with a proposed rule. Which in turn, invites further comments before a final rule gets issued and regulations change. And that process, as you can imagine, can take, depending on the complexity of the matter, can take years in some cases.
Well, yeah, and I think a few of the items we're going to talk about today may be ones that will invite a lot of comment and discussion.
Yes, certainly. I would expect that.
Yes. So, Martin, let me loop back to something you said. You mentioned that the agenda can include many items, and today we're going to talk about four areas that we thought would be of interest to our listeners. How do these four areas, though, fit into the context of the broader agenda?
The agenda that was put out in August contained, I think it was about 38 items on that list. And they're categorized between those that are defined as being in the pre-rule stage, so very, very early stage, and there were three of those. At the point that it was published in August, there were 18 items that were at the proposed rule stage, so where the staff, commissioner staff, were in the process of developing rule proposals. And then there were a further 18 items that were categorized as being in the final rule stage, again, where the staff and the commission were in the process of developing final rules for release. And then of those 38, I mean, since August, a number of those have actually been issued as proposed rules or final rules.
Yeah, we've had a lot of discussion in past podcasts and webcasts about some of these proposals. So it'll be interesting to hear the updates today. Before we get into then the four specific topics, when we look at this, do we see any type of theme when we look at the SEC's priorities, particularly over the upcoming year?
Well, certainly we should go back to the SEC's mission, which is focused on capital formation, investor protection, and the smooth operation of the markets. But perhaps one theme I would highlight, relevant to our listeners, would be around capital formation, simplification, reducing some of the roadblocks and costs of compliance for companies and their reporting.
Okay, so Martin, that's really great background. Now that we've gone through sort of the process and the SEC's overall agenda, let's dive into a project that I think may be one of the ones that does result in many comments. And I know many of our listeners will be aware that in December 2018, the SEC published a request for comment soliciting input on the nature, content, and timing of earnings releases and quarterly reports made by reporting companies. So can you share some thoughts on that?
Yes, certainly, Heather. So this had been a topic where the SEC had sought comments in connection with a concept release back in 2016 related to the frequency of periodic reporting. We heard prominent voices in the business community last summer who were vocal on some of the shortcomings and dangers of short-term earnings guidance on a quarterly basis, and yet others who commented on the distraction, if you like, that quarterly reporting put on company management. And perhaps most, one of the biggest spotlights was a presidential tweet. So President Trump specifically asked the SEC to study the matter of periodic reporting based on discussions he had had with members of the business community. So, with all of that, a release went out in December, as you mentioned, that is soliciting public input on how the SEC could reduce the burdens associated with quarterly reporting while still maintaining or enhancing, the effectiveness of company disclosures and investor protections. So they're seeking input on how the existing system of quarterly reporting, or periodic reporting, earnings releases, guidance, and so on, may foster a short-term focus by management or others in the market. Their release doesn't contain any proposals. It contains a list of questions that are grouped into, there's 46 groups, and in fact there's more than 150 questions in this document.
That's
a lot of questions.
Okay.
And, they're around, some of the themes would be around, is there unnecessary duplication in information, for example, between press releases and then the subsequent 10Q? Should the rules allow certain companies or classes of companies some flexibility regarding the frequency of reporting? Should it be 3 months, 6 months, or some other period, and soliciting input in terms of, what are the perspectives on how the current system impacts corporate decision-making and strategic thinking, or how might it result in kind of an inefficient outcomes? So one of the big questions, of course, with all of that is, should you plan on still reporting quarters in 2019? The answer to that would be absolutely yes. This is a very early stage, early stage document. It's a fact finding. And as I outlined in our first topic, after getting input on this, there'll be a process of digesting the input before any possible rule proposals, if any, evolve from that, before you get to final rules. So I would expect that's going to take some time. The other comment I would make here is, it's really critical that participants in the markets, companies and others, engage in the comment letter process. This release has gone out. There's a 90-day window to provide comments once the request is published in the Federal Register, and those comments are meaningful. The staff and the commission take those comments very seriously. They encourage people to participate in the process. And, that input has a very direct impact on the way, the guidance can evolve. So we really encourage, and I know the staff would encourage people to respond.
So one follow-up question on that, 150, I think you said, questions seems a bit daunting. If I'm a company and I'm interested, what's the expectation in terms of, can I pick and choose, or what could a company do?
No, that's a great question. So, so certainly, there's a lot there. Encourage listeners to read the release, but a response does not have to address all the questions. In fact, it may not necessarily need to address any of the questions, but can address kind of concerns and issues related to the matter. But yeah, you don't have to respond to all 150.
Right. This sounds like something that many people want to have a voice in. So this is a good opportunity to do that. All right. We're hitting the middle of the podcast. Let's go to topic number three. We've spoken about this in past webcasts and podcasts. This relates to the July 2018 proposal to simplify and streamline the financial disclosure requirements applicable to registered debt offerings for guarantors and issuers of guaranteed securities. And I know we've gotten feedback that people are always happy to hear about simplification. And you know, obviously, there was some good response to the SEC simplification in the fall of 2018. So, Martin, can you just give us an overview of what's proposed and then what we're thinking from a timeline perspective?
Yeah, certainly. So and this can be a little bit of a technical area, so I'll try and keep it high level. But a bit of background is when registered debt is issued that has a guarantee, then you have, you know, you can have two or more registered securities that have reporting obligations, the debt that was issued and the guarantee that was issued. And so there are situations where issuers and or subsidiary issuers and guarantors need to provide separate financial statements unless certain exceptions are met, and those exceptions can be quite hard to meet. You know, there are, and this is, you know, generally or colloquially referred to as Rule 310. That consolidating information, if you qualify, contain balance sheets, income statements, cash flows for you know, split between company, guarantors, non-guarantors for up to 3 years. And if you have multiple guarantee structures, you can have multiple sets of that information.
That's
a lot of information. And then another situation is if you, which can require additional financial statements, is if you have affiliates that collateralize registered debt, and you could be in certain circumstances required to provide the separate financial statements for that affiliate. So again, based on requests for comment back in 2015, the feedback that the SEC received was that the cost of complying with the rules was high, and that many debt offerings are either not registered with the SEC or the guarantee structures are amended to really try and fit the existing accommodations. But the end result being that either investors are going without you know, the protections of having registered debt, or they're going without the guarantees or a suboptimal financial structure. So investors not getting the protections, or the company's paying a higher cost for that debt. So with the proposal that came out in the summer, it was really to simplify the disclosure requirements associated with registered debt offerings that contain these guarantee or collateral features. So some of those proposed amendments would include requiring information for only the most recently ended year, for example, as opposed to all years back, replacing some of that consolidating information with more summarized financial information. And allowing, relaxing some of the requirements to apply these accommodations. So, it's, for example, an issuer or a guarantor doesn't have to be 100% owned. As long as it's consolidated by the company, it would qualify. So comments on that proposal closed back in December, so just about a month ago. And so the staff is... you know, at least once the shutdown is over, we'll be working through the comments received on that rule proposal. And there were just under 40 of those received. And then the expectation is, or our expectation is, that the staff will then analyze those responses and will work on a final rule proposal. So stay tuned on.
So it sounds like more to come, and I guess timeline may depend on broader forces then.
Yeah, no, certainly. And it's probably worth noting, I mean, certainly with the shutdown, that's clearly going to have an impact in terms of, you know, delaying the work on some of these rule proposals. And so that may push
timing
out
a little bit. Yep, makes sense. Okay, so that's very helpful. And I know, as I said, we've talked about this before, and I know people are looking forward to some potential changes there. Speaking of simplification and change, I know in the December AICPA conference on current SEC and PCAOB developments, there was some discussion of our fourth topic, which is the requirement to file financial statements of acquired businesses, I believe 305 financial statements. So Martin, can you talk to us about that discussion?
Yeah, so this is another example where SEC rules require financial statements for companies other than the registrant, and you know, this frequently arises when a public company is acquiring a company that's large based on certain thresholds, and you need to set the separate financial statements for that acquired company, again, for up to 3 years, you know, together with pro forma financial information. And then, you know, for companies filing registration statements, it may need to update that information to a more current period. So this is a topic which is on the agenda. We understand that the SEC staff are working on a rule proposal. And the SEC chairman had indicated back in early December that he was hoping that there'd be some, you know, completion of this proposed rule initiative sometime during the second quarter of 2019. Although obviously since then, you know, again, with the shutdown, that may impact timing there. Another reminder, I would say, just on this topic, because it is a frequent challenge for companies, is the reminder that, you know, in situations where the existing rules related to acquiree statements produce counterintuitive results, or where the acquisition may not seem significant, although it is applying, you know, based on applying the significance test, that the staff do entertain requests for waivers or some relief related to those financial statement requirements. So certainly if a company has an unusual or challenging situation, it's worth discussing that with your advisors and with the SEC staff.
So then why don't we move on to our final topic? And I think this one is also early on its pathway, and that would be possible amendments to the accelerated filer thresholds.
Yes, so one of the significant impacts of a company's accelerated filer status, you know, apart from when it's, you know, the due dates of its 10Qs and 10Ks, is whether it is subject to an audit of its internal controls over financial reporting. So under existing rules, newly public companies, companies that qualify as emerging growth companies, you know, for up to 5 years, and non-accelerated filers, so those with public floats less than $75 million, are not subject to the audit of ICFR. So when the SEC raised the thresholds for smaller reporting companies back in mid 2018, they did not at that time change the accelerated filer thresholds, and so, you know, and intentionally so. And really kind of continuing the theme, if you like, of you know, one size doesn't necessarily fit all, the SEC Chairman Clayton has stated that there may be categories of small and emerging companies where a more scaled approach to you know, applying the reporting on ICFR, or specifically the audit of ICFR, may be applicable. So one thought is, and he's directed the SEC staff to, you know, develop, to look into the matter and develop proposals around that accelerated filer definition, kind of specific to the reporting on ICFR. And so, you know, a couple of examples that, or at least one example that he'd given in a public speech was, you know, not only necessarily around the, you know, the market cap, but, you know, take, for example, a biotech company may have a large market cap but no revenue and very straightforward financial statements. Is that another, you know, are there other other factors that may weigh into that? So no insights as yet in terms of where, you know, what that would look like, but that's certainly an item on the agenda that the staff are actively working on.
So it sounds like, kind of to wrap things up, a lot potentially to come during 2019, and I guess potentially even extending into 2020 with these different proposals.
Yeah, no, a lot going on as always, and, you know, it comes back to an ambitious agenda, but, you know, there's a lot of change.
Yeah, and some maybe welcome change on some of these topics. So thank you so much, Martin. This has been great discussion, and I think will be very helpful to our listeners as they wrap up year end and start to look at their own agendas for 2019. And then to our listeners, as always, thank you for listening to this episode. For additional information on SEC developments and standard setting, please check out our SEC standard setting page on cfodirect.com. And for current developments, you can also find us on Twitter at cfodirect. For PwC, I'm Heather Horn. Thanks for tuning in.
This podcast is brought to you by PwC, all rights reserved. PwC refers to the U.S. member firm or one of its subsidiaries or affiliates, and may sometimes refer to the PwC network. Each member firm is a separate legal entity. Please see www.pwc.com/structure for further details. This podcast is for general information purposes only and should not be used as a substitute for consultation with professional advisors.